Once again, a very good morning to you. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You right here on 4CRB. As always, this is your opportunity to get free legal advice, but you do need to get on that telephone. 55208888 is our number. That's 55208888. 07 in front of the number if you're calling from south of the Tweed River. And don't forget, we do have our email address, talkback, one word, all in lowercase, at 4, that's the figure 4. crb.com if you want to email a question into us, which we will answer next week. So any emails that are received during the week are dealt with in the following week's program. Thank you to all the people who called in last week. Certainly made for a very interesting program. Many and varied calls, and that's what we like, because that provides a broad range of advice, not only to the people calling to get that advice, but also a lot of people who might be listening out there and don't necessarily have the ability to get to the phone and make a call. So don't forget also that if you hear something on the program and you don't quite catch it, or you would like to know more about it, the details of the various calls received and the programs themselves are downloaded onto the Bell Legal website. So that's www.bellegal.com.au, along with some other very interesting information in various areas. One of which I was, in fact, having a look at over the weekend, and I thought it may be of interest to our listeners today, and that is the issue of challenging a will. And this was prepared by our estate litigation team at Bell Legal, and the circumstances in which a will can be challenged. And with this, I'm talking about a will being challenged because it is not valid, rather than a claim for provision out of the estate. Now, there are a number of grounds under which a will can be challenged if it fails to meet the formal requirements for a valid will. If the will maker obviously didn't have testamentary capacity at the time the will was made, the will maker did not have knowledge of or approve the contents of the will, and that often happens where they're under undue influence. There might be fraud involved, where the will has been prepared fraudulently, or otherwise there are suspicious circumstances surrounding the preparation of the will. So they're just some of the grounds under which people may consider challenging will. But enough of that. We've got a couple of callers online. We'll come back to that subject if we have time, as we say good morning to Carmel. G'day, Carmel. How are you today?
Oh, good morning, John. Very well, thank you. I'm just wondering, if you're going for a divorce and you send it in, but you don't have the marriage certificate, can you apply for a marriage certificate, or is the other person can block it?
No, you can apply for a marriage certificate if you're one of the parties to the marriage, and you would obtain that if you're in Queensland from the Registrar of Births, Deaths and Marriages.
So the other party can't block it.
To the best of my knowledge, no, they certainly can't, Carmel. Otherwise, if you're in a situation where you're wanting to get divorced and the other party doesn't want to get divorced, and they're just trying to be difficult, they could effectively stymie you from doing so. And certainly, I don't see any basis upon which that would be the case.
Also, it's gone out of my head. I'll hang up. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, if you remember what you were calling about, the other point was, Carmel, give us a call back.
Okay. Thank you.
No trouble. And we say a very good morning to Jenny. G'day, Jenny. How are you today?
Oh, hello. Good morning. I wanted to ask about the dissolving, if that's the right terminology, of a discretionary fund.
Of a discretionary trust?
A trust, sorry, yes.
Right, okay. So the correct terminology for a trust is actually to vest the trust, means the same thing. It's basically dissolving it. And so it will depend on the terms of the trust deed, Jenny. So you need to look at the trust deed and see what it says. Normally, all trust deeds will have a vesting date, which is normally 79 or 80 years from the date the trust was made, but there is also provision in it to bring forward the vesting date. So you just need to follow the procedure that's laid down there. Normally, it is a resolution by the trustee of the trust resolving to vest the trust, and then the assets of the trust need to be distributed in accordance with that resolution. And if it's a discretionary trust, then obviously the trustee has a discretion how those assets will be distributed, subject always, of course, to the terms of the trust deed.
All right. If there is more than one person in the discretionary...
So more than one beneficiary...
Yep.
Yep.
That's right, yes. There are two directors, if that's the right word.
Well, is it a corporate trustee, is it? So the company, it's a company that is the trustee of the trust?
No. It's just two individuals.
Okay, so you've got two trustees, and those trustees, are they also the beneficiaries, are they, or they're two of the beneficiaries?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
so the trustees would have to consider all of the beneficiaries who might be entitled, and then they're entitled to exercise their discretion after giving due consideration to the circumstances and entitlement of each beneficiary as to how they will actually allocate the assets. So as long as they've given due consideration to each beneficiary and subject to, always to the terms of the trust deed, they can basically allocate all of the assets of the trust to one beneficiary to the exclusion of the other if that's the way they want to do it.
Right, and this has to be done through a lawyer or through a solicitor?
I would recommend that you do that because, as I say, it is extremely important to have the terms of the trust deed read and understood so that you don't unwittingly do something that, in fact, is contrary to the terms of the trust deed.
Right, okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, then. All the very best. And time on 4CRB just keeps rolling along. It's just coming up to 13 minutes past 9 past 10 on the tweet as we say good morning to Frank. G'day, Frank. How are you today?
Very good, thank you, John.
That's good. How can I help?
My problem is I'm renting a house and I'm a tradesman, I'm a painter. And all my gear is scared at the back of the house. And what has happened now, a huge tree over a couple of weeks that has fallen off from the neighbour's house next door, completely uprooted, and landed on the shed and has crushed the shed, and I can't get access to my gear.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in contact with the people which own the house that I'm renting to see what's going to happen about it, and they said, oh, they'll get in contact with the people next door, which they did, and the owner came back to me and said, oh, what's happened to the people next door? Been in contact with their insurance, and their reply was, it's an act of God, so they can't do anything about the tree.
Well, it'll depend. Did the tree fall down in a storm or something of that nature?
In a storm.
Okay, right. And what you obviously didn't have your gear insured.
No.
Yeah, look, you're in a difficult position there. Does the landlord have insurance that might cover the contents, which would include your goods?
No, I just want them to get rid of the tree. The whole thing seems to be with the tree in the backyard. There's no one's payment.
So no one wants to get the tree removed?
No.
Well, I would have thought that would be the landlord's responsibility because if you've rented the property, one of the conditions of your rental is that you're entitled to full, free and unencumbered access to everything that you're renting, and that includes the shed in the rear yard. So what I would be suggesting is that if the landlord's not prepared to remove the tree to give you that access or is being dilatory in doing so, that you serve them with a notice to remedy breach under the neighbourhood dispute resolution or the residential tenancy legislation.
Yeah, but the tree belongs to the people.
I know it belongs to the people next door, but it's fallen onto this property. And therefore, it is the owners of the property who are renting the property to you who, in my opinion, have an obligation to do something about that. So what you could do if you wanted to speak to someone further in relation to it, I'll just see, you could ring the Residential Tenancy Authority. Is this in Queensland?
New South Wales.
Oh, New South Wales. Okay. Well, look, if you just look up online for the equivalent of the Residential Tenancy Authority in New South Wales, I'm sure they'll have a 1300 or a 1800 number. Give them a call and just go through the circumstances, and I'm sure they'll be able to tell you what you need to do.
Thank you.
Okay, Frank, all the very best. Time continues to march along, 15 and a half minutes past 9 past 10 on the Tweed, and we say good morning to Antoinette. Good morning, Antoinette. How are you today?
I'm tired. I didn't sleep all night because I moved house.
Sorry, you've what?
I've moved to a new address.
Right, yes.
Anyhow, I'm seeking legal advice.
Yes.
I was last February the aggrieved, and my daughter was the respondent in a domestic violence circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
I've applied to have a 5-year protection order varied,
mm-hmm.
and my daughter doesn't understand. She can still contact me, text me, approach my address with my consent in writing or in a text.
Mm-hmm.
I would like my daughter to visit me, and she's requested, can she do so?
Mm-hmm.
So what would your advice be for my own safety on that issue?
So what you're saying is that you have a restraining order against your daughter, is that right?
No, it's a protection order by a magistrate
So there's a protection order against your daughter in your favour to stop her from seeing you?
Yes, initially, although a magistrate buried it for me.
Right, and what did the variation say?
She can approach my address within 100 metres. She can write to me.
Mm-hmm.
She can text me.
Yep.
She can ring me. She
yep.
can see me with my consent in writing
mm-hmm.
or in a text to her phone.
All right. So, and you want your daughter to come and see you, is that right?
Yes.
Well, isn't the answer in the order the court gave you? If the order says that you can text your daughter and give her permission to come and see you, then isn't that what you need to do?
I've done that, although she says I'm not a magistrate or her solicitor, and she can only see me if it's urgent.
Well, it's entirely up to her whether she wants to see you or not. I mean, it's a free country, so she can do as she pleases. The only other thing I could suggest you do is that you could send to her a copy of the order, the variation order that the magistrate made, it because that would then set out the circumstances under which she's entitled to see you. But it's entirely up to her whether she wishes to or not.
Yes, I can't send it. She hasn't disclosed her full address.
Well, you could take a photo of it and send it by SMS.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Flagley.
No trouble at all, Antoinette. All the very best. And the time just coming up to 19 minutes past 9 past 10 on the Tweed. And we say a good morning to Mario. G'day, Mario. How are you today? Hello, Mario. Are you there?
G'day, John. How are you this morning?
Not too bad. Can you just turn your radio off or down if you haven't already done so?
No worries at all.
Good on you. How can I help you, John, today?
John, I'm based in Queensland. I know you've covered the subject many times about dividing fences on properties. My fence is in need of repair. And I guess the problem I'm having is my neighbouring neighbour. He's in poor health, and I think he's on a fixed income, so I just don't really know how to approach that kind of thing, to sort of share the cost, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the first thing you should do, Mario, is get a couple of quotes. I suppose the first thing you should do is approach your neighbour and say, look, Jack, the fence between our properties really needs to be repaired. I can't afford to carry out the repairs at my own cost. So I'm proposing to get a couple of quotes to repair it, and I'd like you to contribute half the cost of doing that and just see what sort of response you get. Now, If he doesn't respond favourably to that, you would then be required to serve him with a notice in relation to the repair of the fence, and that, from memory, is under the I think it's the Dividing Fences section of the Neighbourhood Dispute Resolution Act. So you'd need to serve him with a formal notice, which would include the couple of quotes. And if he still is not prepared to contribute, then unfortunately you have to go to QCAT, Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal, to get an order to fence, which would determine, A, the type of fence that... firstly, it would determine whether the fence needs to be repaired or replaced. Secondly, which of those quotes or any other quote would be acceptable. And thirdly, the basis upon which that cost would be shared. Now, of course, that gives no guarantee that he'll be able to afford to pay the cost financially, but at least it will give you the order and the entitlement to seek reimbursement or seek payment from him. But it's very important that you don't go ahead and do any work on the fence until you have an agreement in writing as to how the cost is going to be shared, or alternatively an order of QCAT if it's not possible to reach an amicable agreement.
All right, John. Well, thanks for breaking the steps down for me. I really appreciate that. Have a great day.
You too, Mario. All the very best. Time on 4CRB, 22 minutes past 9, past 10, down south of the border, as we say good morning to John. G'day, John. How are you today?
Very best. Time on 4CRB, 21.
John, can you please turn your radio off?
Yeah, hello. Yep.
Yes, how are you, John?
Good, John. John, blood trust.
Yep.
What have you had ever in your company there had a fight with anybody who had a blood trust?
Well, I can't immediately remember ever having a dispute in relation to a blood trust. You're presumably talking about a bloodline trust that is set up within a will, so a testamentary discretionary trust, which confines the assets to the bloodline of a nominated beneficiary.
That's exactly right.
Right. Well, as long as the trust is set up correctly, then they're extremely difficult to challenge. So the important things are the independence of the trustees, or at least, for example, if you were wanting to set up a bloodline trust to protect your daughter, then the last thing that you would do is have your daughter as the executor and trustee of the will, and trustee of the bloodline trust, and appointor of the trust, and the sole beneficiary of the trust, because that's effectively leaving everything to your daughter. The court would regard that trust as being the alter ego of your daughter, and therefore it's highly likely that trust could be attacked. So if you have independent trustees, or at the very least independent trustees acting with your son, if you want your son to be one of the trustees, or your daughter, if you have independent appointors to the trust, and there are for example, the beneficiaries are your daughter and your grandchildren or whatever, so that that one person is not the sole beneficiary, then that sort of trust is extremely difficult to attack. Whether it be a claim, there certainly couldn't be a claim against that by the spouse of one of your children, but if it is in the family court, then certainly if it is set up with the adequate distance and independence, as I've suggested, most of the decisions that I've seen, the family court has held that the assets within the trust can't be touched.
Even though the surname might be whatever it is.
Yeah, it does. The name doesn't really matter.
The name makes no difference.
No, the most important thing is the independence of the trustees and the appointor and who the beneficiaries are. So my advice is that you need to get expert legal advice on it to make sure that it'll be as watertight as possible.
Yeah, all right, then. Thank you very much for that.
Okay, John, all the best. Time on 4CRB is just come up to, where are we? Coming up to 25 and a half minutes past nine. And we say good morning to Renato. G'day, Renato. How are you today?
Oh, hello, John.
How can I help?
Good, thank you. I'm good, thank you. I've just come out of hospital. I had a major, I had a fall in at one of the large shopping centres on the Gold Coast and broke, and I've got metal plates and everything put in my leg. I'm just wondering, how do I go about compensation?
Right, okay. Well, look, what I would suggest you do is that you need to contact a lawyer who specialises in that area of law, because just the mere fact that you've had a fall in a shopping centre does not automatically mean that you're going to be entitled to damages at all, because the circumstances of the fall will determine that. For example, if you simply tripped over your own feet or your own shopping, whatever, it may be that you have no claim. But so what I would suggest you do, did this happen in Queensland or New South Wales?
No, right on here on the Gold Coast.
Okay, so ring the Queensland Law Society. So their number is 1300 FORQLS.
Wait a minute,
1300? Yes, F for Fred, O-R-Q-L-S. You know, so I'll just see if I can tell you what that actually is, because... are you there?
Yeah,
so 1300, so it's 367...
Yes.
757.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's down on my sheet as 1300 FORQLS. You know how below the numbers on a touchscreen you have the letters?
Yeah.
So that's what it is. Yeah. So I've just converted it for you off my phone to tell you what the actual number is. Hmm.
No, I fell going down some steps and it was all caught on security.
Yes.
And the security guard and everybody came out and taken by ambulance.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, what I would suggest is call a law society and tell them you need a recommendation to a law firm that can handle that matter for you. If you're looking for a no-win, no-fee firm, make sure you specify that to the law society, that you would prefer to be dealing with a firm that can look after the matter for you without you having to be out of pocket.
Don't they take half the money, though?
Not necessarily half the money, but they certainly take what's referred to as an uplift. So they do, their costs are substantially higher when they carry all the costs. So you do need to bear that in mind, but they will make that very clear to you right at the very start. So the costs agreement will make it very clear what you will be entitled to at the end. So that's something that you need to be most careful about.
Yeah, okay then, I'll get on to that. Thank you, John.
Okay then, all the very best. And that's just bringing us up to 29 minutes past 9, past 10 south of the border. And that's probably about all the time we have for calls today. So thank you to all the people who've called in this morning to make for such an interesting program. Those comments I was making earlier about challenges to a will, and in particular the article that's been written by the litigation team, the estate litigation team at Bell Legal, does also touch on the issue of testamentary capacity. And I have for a couple of weeks been trying to speak about the issue of capacity, because it's becoming more and more an issue, not just in relation to the challenging of wills, the making of powers of attorney and whether they've been validly made, even things like entering into contracts. So capacity is becoming more and more an issue, and in particular legal capacity. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning. I'll look forward to being back with you again next week. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.